We discussed yesterday evening about Naranarayan Rishi. And then this verse, text 7, is making a comparison of Naranarayan Rishi and what happened when he was confronted with Cupid trying to entice him, and Lord Shiva, what happened to Lord Shiva when Lord Shiva was approached by Cupid in the same purpose. So the verse reads, great stalwarts like Lord Shiva can, by their wrathful glances, overcome lust and vanquish him. This is Cupid saying. Yet they cannot be free from the overwhelming effects of their own wrath. Such wrath can never enter into the heart of him, the Lord, who is above all this. So, how can lust take shelter in his mind? So, in the purport, Prabhupada writes, when Lord Shiva was engaged in severely austere meditation, Cupid, the demigod of lust, threw his arrow of sex desire. Lord Shiva, being angry at him, glanced at Cupid in great wrath, and at once the body of Cupid was annihilated. Although Lord Shiva was so powerful, he was unable to get free from the effects of such wrath. But in the behavior of Lord Vishnu, there is no incident of such wrath at any time. So, there's not much in the Bhagavatam describing this incident other than just making some light reference like this, without details. One place it says that this fire came from Lord Shiva and just incinerated Cupid into ashes. Like Muchukunda zapped Kaliyavana. Gone. Pile of ashes. There isn't description either about the wrath of Lord Shiva and, you know, what effect that had after the incineration of Cupid. But in the 10th canto, chapter 55, there is again some reference to this incident of Kandarpa getting incinerated. Is anyone from our audience here familiar with that chapter? The death of Kandarpa by the wrath of Indra, by the wrath of Lord Shiva, and what happened afterwards? No one remembers? Krishna book buffs? Pradyumna. Okay, there's a little more to it than that. It's a very intriguing story. There's details. Kandarpa, the demigod Kandarpa, is a partial expansion of the form of Lord Vishnu known as Pradyumna in the spiritual world. Pradyumna is, the Chaturvyuha are in Vishnu Tattva category. Oh, Krishna Balaram. Chaturvyuha are in the Vishnu Tattva category. Vasudev, Pradumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarshan. These four Chaturvyuha, they're Vishnu Tattva, they're expansions of the personality of Godhead. In the Vaikuntha realm, they're expansions of Lord Narayan. So this Pradumna of the spiritual world makes a partial expansion as Kandarpa in the heavenly realm. The language that's used by our acharyas is this language of prototype. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses this word prototype. There's the prototype Shambhu, and then there's the Shambhu who carries the glance of Vishnu. So this language prototype it's just an English translation of something that there isn't a very good other term to use, so he uses that term. It's like my understanding of what prototype is somebody that's an inventor, they go to the patent office and they present the prototype. And they patent the prototype. And so that anything that is made like the prototype, they have a patent on it. So you make one, and then from the one you can make many. Something like that. So in the spiritual world, there's the prototypes of things. It's like, you know, the real thing, the original thing. And then there are replications or expansions of that original thing, the prototype. So there's a prototype Brahma, there's a prototype Shambhu, there's a prototype Pradumna, and then there's expansions. So Kandarpa, this one that goes around and tries to agitate Markandeya Rishi and Naranarayan Rishi and Lord Shiva, he's the demigod. So he's expendable. He can be incinerated, just like that. So when Kandarpa lost his body, he was a spirit soul that had to take shelter somewhere, but there was no apparent place to take shelter. So this incident of Lord Shiva incinerating Kandarpa took place in Dwarapa Yuga during the same period of time as Krishna's presence in this world. So what happened was, having no place to take shelter, he, as the partial expansion of Pradumna, he entered into the body of Pradumna. He merged with the body, or entered into the body of Pradumna, the plenary Vishnu Tattva, and the Jiva Tattva took shelter in Pradumna. And then Pradumna took birth as the son of Krishna and Rukmini. Then he took birth. And after his taking birth, on the sixth day after he was born, Pradumna was kidnapped by a demon. And Shambhara, I believe, was the name of the demon. And Shambhara kidnapped Pradumna because somehow he had the idea, doesn't describe, that this was an enemy, and so he to rid himself of his enemy, he took the child and threw the child in the river, thinking, end of story. A big fish big enough to swallow a six-year-old child, swallowed Pradyumna. And Pradyumna was, as the personality of Godhead, was carried around in the body of a fish for some time. A fisherman who was in the employment of Shambhara caught a bunch of fish in his net, including this one fish, and when he opened up the body of the fish, check it out, there's a small child. So, meanwhile, the wife, going back in the story, the wife of Kandarpa, the demigod Kandarpa, his wife's name was Rati Devi. And Rati Devi, not knowing what to do minus her husband, she took up some service. She took up the service of being a cook in the employment of Shambhara. So, forget the details. Somehow she became very attracted to this little child that came out of the fish. And somehow, the detail I can't remember, you could read it. She came to understand this is her former husband. Can anybody recall how she came to understand that? What? Narada Muni came and told her. That makes sense. Hey, Rati. Guess what? That's your husband. And so, when Pradyumna grew up and became a young boy, he saw Rati checking him out, like, you know, in lustful, conjugal way. And he said, "My dear mother, this is not at all appropriate. Mothers don't look at their sons this way." And she then disclosed the fact, "I'm not your mother, I'm your wife. Narada Muni told me." And not only that, the person who tried to kill you is none other than Shambhara. And so you should kill Shambhara. But he has all these mystic powers, because he's this like super demon. So I'll give you certain mantras, Maha Maya mantras, and when he starts to do his magic tricks with his mystic powers, you just chant these mantras and it'll neutralize his mystic powers. So, Pradyumna confronted Shambhara and spoke some insulting words. Shambhara became very angry and challenged him to combat, left the palace, went with all of his weapons, started firing his weapons at Pradyumna. Pradyumna chanted the Maha Maya mantras and neutralized all his weapons, took his sword and cut off the head of Shambhara. End of that fellow. And then Rati Devi, with her mystic powers, carried Pradyumna to Dwarka. Rukmini was so happy. The others, the young ladies that saw Pradyumna for the first time, they mistook that it looked like Krishna. So being shy, they scattered. But then after some time, they could detect slight differences because Pradyumna's features were so similar to his father's. They could detect slight differences. And then they started coming around and became very attracted. So this Pradyumna, as the son of Rukmini and Krishna, was the manifestation of what happened to Kandarpa after he got cindered by Lord Shiva. So that was just a little detour from our main message here. The message that Prabhupada wants to present in the purport is that Vishnu, as Narayan, the incarnation of Vishnu, has this feature that he has no lust and as a result has no wrath following lust. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna asks Arjuna asks Krishna, what is it that impels one into action, to doing something even you don't want to do it? What is that? As if compelled by force. And the answer is Kamesha Krodesha Rajoguna Samudbhava. Yes? Kamesha Krodesha. So, from contact with the mode of passion, first comes lust. And then, following lust, when lust is frustrated, comes anger. So lust, anger. Now the statement that's being made is, in the purport, is this anger, which is the younger brother of frustration, Prabhupada has described like that, because they're born of the same mother. The mother is contact with the mode of passion, comes lust, comes the younger brother, anger. For the Supreme Lord, he knows no anger. He exhibits no anger. And therefore we can deduce there's also no lust. Now, another example of that that's presented here is the story of Bhrigu Muni. When Bhrigu Muni kicked the chest of Vishnu, Lord Vishnu didn't become angry, whereas Lord Shiva, by verbal, and Lord Brahma by mental offense. Yeah. Both Brahma and Lord Shiva became angry, but Lord Vishnu didn't become angry. Rather, Lord Vishnu was apologizing. Oh, your poor foot. Must be hurt because my chest is so hard. Your foot is so soft. I'm so sorry. You hurt your foot. Prabhupada is explaining, absent the anger, one can understand there's no lust, no passion. And contrastingly, while Lord Shiva can overcome attraction for lust by his powers, the statement is that he became controlled by or affected by his wrath, like at the time of cosmic annihilation. He exhibits this feature with intense anger. He does his dance of destruction. He must be an expert dancer just to destroy the universe just from dancing. Very intense dancing. And the universe became destroyed. But apparently, there's not detail, but apparently he literally takes up that mood. And in Krishna's case, he doesn't become angered. He takes action to destroy demons and so forth, but it's not from a position of anger, like Krishna's killing of Kamsa. It was playful sport. The description in the 10th canto is when Krishna had killed Chanura and Balaram had killed Mushtuka. And then the brothers, there were three brothers, there were five total. When the two were killed, the other three were also, they came onto the wrestling mat and they were finished. And Krishna was looking out of the corner of his eye at Kamsa sitting on his big throne. The description that Shukadeva Goswami gives is, as a young boy may look at an attractive young girl lustfully, Krishna was thinking, I want to finish Kamsa. So he jumped up on the raised platform and dragged Kamsa down to the wrestling mat and smashed him. And then so that everybody would know that he was finished, he grabbed Kamsa by the hair and just dragged him across the wrestling mat. Lifeless. He's finished. Hari-go. Kamsa's finished. Wicked Kamsa's dead. But in Krishna's case, it's reciprocation with the mood of another rather than name dveshto stina priyaha. Krishna doesn't become angry with another or doesn't hold another in particular dearness. Rather, he's simply reciprocating with the regard that another has for him. It's a big difference, huge difference. And so this is all being narrated so that we can understand the position of Naranarayan Rishi when approached by Cupid, as opposed to Lord Shiva when approached by Cupid. Then the next verse, text 8, speaks something that, frankly, it's a little difficult to understand. He's, in the purport, Prabhupada is speaking about the form of the Lord that appeared before Lord Dhruva as, before Dhruva Maharaj, as Prishni Garba. I'll read the verse. Text 8. Being insulted by the sharp words spoken by the co-wife of the king, even in his presence, Prince Dhruva, though only a boy, took to severe penance in the forest, and the Lord, being satisfied by his prayer, awarded him the Dhruva planet, which is worshipped by great sages both upward and downward. Both upward and downward indicates that within the structure of the universe there are planets in the structure of the universe above Dhruvaloka. Below Dhruvaloka, there's the seven stars, principal stars, like the Big Dipper, and then so many other planets. But Bhrigu's planet and some other planets are above that planet, the pole star. So we know the description. Prabhupada gives the whole story. Dhruva was sitting on the lap of his brother, Uttam, was sitting on the lap of Uttanapada. And being naturally affectionate, Dhruva was slightly older than Uttam. He wanted to also sit on the lap of his father. And as he tried to climb on the lap of his father, his stepmother stopped him. You can't sit on the lap of your father. You can't sit on the throne of your father, although you're to become the king because you're the firstborn. Don't think that you can sit on the throne of your father. You won't be allowed to do that unless you take birth from my womb. And the only way that you're going to sit on the throne is that you die and then you take birth again from my womb. And if you're really lucky, Lord Vishnu will allow you to do that. Get down. Dhruva was very hurt. He turned to his father, and his father remained silent, so he was double hurt. He just burst out crying and stormed out of the palace and went to his mother, who was situated elsewhere, and told his mother the whole story, and she began to cry because there was nothing that she could do. She told Dhruva, "There's nothing I can do. I can't help you. I want to help you, but I can't help you because your father holds so much affection for his co-wife that he doesn't even care for me. In fact, he's embarrassed that he's married to me. I'm helpless. I can't do anything." Then Dhruva said, "I want to sit on that throne. How can I do that? If you get the favor of Lord Vishnu, anything can happen." "Very well. Where do I find him?" "Lord Vishnu." "Well, just a woman in the palace, I don't know, but I'm told that sages, they go to the forest and somehow they find Lord Vishnu." Dhruva considered and said, "Very well, I'm heading for the forest." Got up and left, and just like that, just went to the forest. Didn't even go to his room, got his things, just went to the forest. And he met Narada, and Narada instructed him in the ways of achieving spiritual perfection, including chanting of his Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya mantra. I have a very, very wonderful PowerPoint presentation that shows this whole story. It's very nice. Have I shown it here? Okay, it's very nice. And he saw Lord Vishnu after 6 months. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada writes, Lord Vasudev incarnated himself as Prishnigarbha, the personality of Godhead with four hands, and awarded the prince a specific planet above the seven stars. He says it again. So the Lord incarnated himself as Prishnigarbha just to satisfy the pure devotee of the Lord, and Prince Dhruva achieved this perfection simply by chanting the hymn mentioned above, after being initiated by another pure devotee, Narada. So the mystery for me is what's the connection between Prishnigarbha and the form that was seen by Dhruva? What Prabhupada is writing here is that form that was saw by Dhruva is Prishnigarbha. So we know Prishnigarbha as the son of Sutapa and Prishni. We know that because Krishna in the prison house of Kamsa informs Vasudeva and Devaki, "This is who I am. I'm the forearm form of Vishnu, see? Not just your child. Here's my form with all my ornaments. And previously, in your birth, previous births, you were Sutapa and Prishni, and you underwent long austerities with the desire to have, as your son, a person like Lord Vishnu. So I appeared before you in the same form that you see me now and promised that not just one birth, one lifetime, but three lifetimes, I would appear as your son. And the first time was as Prishnigarbha. So that's all we hear about Prishnigarbha normally. Now here it's in Sanatana Goswami's Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it's also mentioned that the form that came before Dhruva was Prishnigarbha. There must be some scriptural reference somewhere that says that. Otherwise, Sanatana Goswami wouldn't say it, and Prabhupada wouldn't say it. But you go, now going back to the description that when Dhruva was performing in the Bhagavatam, it describes when Dhruva was performing his austerities of not breathing, or just like we find in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, folding the incoming and the outgoing breaths into one another. He would not take breaths except for once every 15 days. You can't hold your breath that long. It was in a mystic state, and it was suffocating the whole universe. So much so the demigods were choking, and the demigods went to the same place they went to when they appealed to Krishna to make his appearance in Dwarapayug. They went to that same milk ocean and offered their prayers, and Lord Vishnu appeared before them and said, "Very soon I'll make my appearance, and it's just a small boy, don't worry, we'll take care of it. So he made his appearance. Now the indication is it was Shiradakshai Vishnu who appeared before Dhruva. So it's also mentioned here, it's Prishnigarbha who appeared before Dhruva. So somehow, the only thing that makes sense is that the event of Sutapa and Prishni having Prishnigarbha as their son happened to coincide with this Dhruva Leela. And that when the Lord came before Dhruva, it was as Prishnigarbha, the son of Sutapa and Prishni, who then awarded him this Dhruva Loka planet. Doesn't stitch the two events together, but that's the only thing that makes sense. So, and one other, there's a specific point that's mentioned in the purport. I'll read it. The planet that was awarded to Dhruva, although within the material world, will not be annihilated at the time of devastation, but will remain fixed in its place. And because it is a Vaikuntha planet never to be annihilated, it is worshipped even by the denizens of the seven stars, the Sapta Rishis. They reside on these seven stars. This is the Big Dipper. At least that's, you know, in the Western terminology. They're situated below the Dhruva planet, as well as by the planets which are even above the Dhruva planet. Maharshi Bhrigu's planet is situated above the Dhruva planet. The verse says, "And the Lord, being satisfied by his prayer," Dhruva's prayer, "awarded him the Dhruva planet, which is worshipped by great sages, both upward and downward." Now, I find this of particular interest, although it's a technical point, because when we were in Mayapur, we heard a whole presentation, about 2.5 hours, about the construction of the Mayapur temple. I provided a little DVD that shows by animation what that temple is going to look like, finally. And let me just describe a little bit. How many here have been to Mayapur? So you know how tall Prabhupada's samadhi is. The samadhi is about one-third as tall as the main temple, because Prabhupada had specific description of how tall he wanted the temple. They have the main temple and then two second domes that are about twice the height of Prabhupada's samadhi. One of those domes is for Lord Nrisimhadev. The other dome is the planetarium. And the central dome is the main temple. And the main temple will have three altars. On the far right, Radha, Madhava, and the Sakis. The central altar, Panchatattva. And the altar to the left will be the disciplic succession. Just from Prabhupada to Jagannath Das Babaji. With murti, very, very huge murtis. Because Lord Nrisimhadev, Prabhupada instructed, and their scriptures describe, is to be worshipped in a separate altar or a separate singhasana. So they are having a separate dome for Lord Nrisimhadev. And then the other dome is the planetarium. Just describe a little bit about the temple. The temple will have the standing capacity during Arati that will have a capacity for 6,000 people. And there's a perimeter walkway that will have the capacity for another 6,000 people. Or if they're moving, it'll be 12,000 people plus the 6,000 standing in the temple room. And then there's many floors that will also have balcony space, and that'll fit another many thousand people each floor. So they're, you know, anticipating huge crowds. And to go from one floor to the next, Prabhupada said, there should be a moving staircase, an escalator. Prabhupada said, people will come from all over just to ride the escalator here in India. Ooh. And then on different floors, there'll be different museums depicting different subject matters from the scripture. And at a certain point, you can go in a circular stair or you can ride an elevator right up to the top of the dome of the main temple. And then there's like a viewing area. You can look in all directions and see the Dham of Navadvip, the River Ganges, and oh, there's Ambika Kamna, and there's Shantipur, and there's Godrum Dweep, and there's all the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And the devotees will be able to stand, the guides will stand on top, and they'll describe all the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya from the dome, and one will even be able to see Calcutta. It's so tall, this building. And then in the planetarium, which is connecting with our verse for this morning, there's a team of PhDs and various others that are working on the planetarium project, because there has been a very substantial amount of work, but you know how scholarship goes. This scholar doesn't necessarily agree with that scholar completely, and they don't want scholar bashing after the thing is built. They want, you know, thorough research. So there's Ravindra Sarup Prabhu is heading the group, and there's one woman who, a disciple of Devamrita Swami, who has her PhD in astrophysics, and she's working on her second PhD in Srimad Bhagavatam, fifth canto. She's part of the team. And there's a whole group of people. So this other dome will have a, just as Prabhupada described it in detail, he says the universe is, the planets in the universe are spread out like a chandelier. You know what a chandelier is. Suspended from the pole star the planets are circumambulating around the pole star. You know, it's like a chandelier that's moving, and the pole star stays in one place, or the fastening place of the chandelier stays in one place, and the planets move, like circumambulating, offering their respect to the abode of Lord Vishnu, this Vaikuntha planet that's in the material world. So they're literally going to have a chandelier hanging with planets moving in different speeds and of different sizes, according to the description of the scriptures. And then each of the floors, as you go up, it'll describe, this is what Bhumandala, this is Bhuvar Mandala, this is Svargaloka, then the home, the another, you know, next, as I described yesterday, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, and then above Satyaloka, the layers of the, so as you go up, then Shivaloka, then the Brahmajyoti, and Vaikunthaloka, and Goloka Vrindavan, according to the description in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no such planetarium. There are planetariums, but not one according to the Vedic version. And it's such an important project that Prabhupada said the whole thing should be called Temple of Vedic Planetarium, not Shishi Radha Madhava Mandir or Panchatattva Mandir. The Temple of Vedic Planetarium. Because Prabhupada wanted very much that the world should appreciate the precision, even empirically measurable things, the precision of the Vedic scriptures. Because there's such faith in science that people blindly believe whatever the scientists say. So this is something that's certainly scientific, and it's measurable, empirically measurable. Where are the planets, how are they structured, and how does the whole thing work? And so he wants to wire it so that the world that just is in awe of science will appreciate with awe the detail and beauty and accuracy of the Vedic picture of the structure of the universe. Now, my reason for going off in that tangent is to share with you something that's happening. The plan is that this planetarium and the temple will be built in from 5 to 6 years. Whereas there were previous plans, it might take 30 years and it would be beyond our lifetime. It's a smaller, more modest project. And doable. There's mention in this verse that there's planets, the planets of rishis like Bhrigu, above the pole star. So, how all the, there must be some, you know, interesting chandelier must have some pieces that are above the place where it fastens somehow. Something like that. Maybe it's just they move in relation to the pole star, but somehow there are planets above the pole star. That must be the case. In the first verse of this seventh chapter, it also mentions Hiranyaksha taking gold from some parts of the earth planet to another part of the earth planet, breaking the natural balance of the weightlessness of the planet, and it fell out of its orbit into the Garbhadak ocean below. So the picture of, that's portrayed in this seventh chapter of Canto 2 is that there's, it uses the phrase the bowl of the universe. So like a bowl, it's half is filled with Garbhadak water, the other half is where the planets are, and that other half where the planets are is like this chandelier thing. And if one piece of the chandelier falls, it falls into the Garbhadak ocean, because that's the other half. So they're going to have to, our researchers are they're taking, they have like many people involved in all of this. Some persons are going and translating the commentary by our acharyas from Sanskrit, and all the whole thing of the fifth canto that speaks about the planets and Vishnu Purana, and they were looking for a copy of Siddhanta Shiromani by Bhakti Siddhanta, and they went to the Calcutta library and they found they have a devotee that's a professional researcher. It's her job. She does this stuff. So she was spending time in the Calcutta libraries. She found the card for Siddhanta Shiromani. She went to the reference library and it wasn't there. And just while we were in Mayapur, they found the man who stole the book from the library. It was a devotee. He wanted to read Siddhanta Shiromani. Some man from Venezuela, Caracas, Venezuela. And he said, I'll be glad to provide you with the book if you let me work with your team on this project. I want Prabhupada's mercy. He said, sure, you can work on the team. Let's see the book. So they're working very aggressively, laboriously, assiduously, trying to gather all that. One devotee, Dhanavir Maharaj, went and visited one of the sannyasis in Udupi. That his thing, he's alive today, his thing is the structure of the universe. And he has all these maps and drawings, and you know, he thinks he's got it figured out. And there's a Sri Vaishnava, I think in Sri Rangam, who similarly, there's a 15th century sannyasi in the Sri Vaishnava line that studied this thing extensively also. And both the Madhva and the Sri Vaishnava follower, sannyasis, accept pretty much the same picture. But they, of course, they're scholars, so they have some differences. Got to have some differences. So there are researchers who are trying to pull all this information together so that at the end, the group from Udupi can tell people, yes, there's this wonderful planetarium. And the Sri Vaishnavas can say, yes, there's this. And just as our Swami so-and-so says, you know, this is showing it in such in this fabulous way, so it'll have the support, not the, you know, criticism of our bona fide traditions, and it'll be a masterpiece. There will be millions of people that go to see this place just to see the planetarium, just to ride the escalators. And the Lord Nrisimhadev temple and Panchatattva temple and seeing the whole of Navadvip, the tallest building. Not the tallest building in West Bengal, they've scaled down, but it's going to be awesome. It's going to certainly draw the attention of the West Bengal government and people all over the world. And what the second thing that Prabhupada wanted is that people would come and get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. They'll come for this fabulous mandir and planetarium, and they'll get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada's vision was big. And Ambarish is paying for most of it. He was paying for a substantial part. There's another family that gave a very generous donation, and Ambarish is going to raise the money for the rest. He's confident he can do that. Primarily in India, big cities in India and around the world. So stay tuned for the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. So when you read, like, at least I know I'm going, when I read these little things, okay, the planets of Bhrigu is above the north star, and the seven stars are below that, and the whole structure of the universe suspends from the North Star, where Dhruva was, and then the Garbhadak ocean beneath. You know, the little pieces, you get the whole picture. The structure of the universe from the Bhagavatam. Okay. Any discussion? Questions? Yes.
Many instances like Guru Maharaj was interested in their practices and finances. There is an effect on their in their Loka, people are feeling their suffocation.
Yeah.
Similarly, Vindicator also in performing hostilities. Something that I why what is it happening where one person is increasing their area and it is affecting them.
Did you hear the question? His question is, how is it possible for one person to affect the conditions of the whole universe, as in the case of Dhruva, by his austerities, he was suffocating the whole universe, and Hiranyakashipu, during his austerities, was affecting the whole universe. How did one person affect the whole universe? That's your question. Well, in Dhruva's case, specifically it's mentioned, because his concentration was upon the personality of Godhead with such intensity that as it was happening, it was affecting the space immediately around him. It was affecting the whole, because the Lord is the Lord of the whole universe. He's the super soul within the heart of every living being in the whole universe, and every atom within the whole universe. So as Dhruva was so completely absorbed, at least that's my understanding of. His restricting of his breathing was restricting the movement of the air within the universe. So the answer to your question is through the agency of Supersoul, who's the controller of the whole universe. If one becomes, or say the same thing in a different way, if one becomes very spiritually powerful, it affects the whole universe. Because the Lord of the universe is in charge of the universe. Or say it the other way. When someone becomes very demoniac, it affects the whole universe. If they're, you know, moderately demoniac, it affects the space around them. But a super demon affects the whole universe. Like in a family, someone becomes very pious, the whole family benefits. When someone becomes very sinful, the whole family suffers karmically, and you know, not just reputation, karmically. So likewise, he became so powerful by mystic power. It was so powerful, it was affecting the whole universe. Affecting the universe in this sense, persons became fearful of him. That sense. So Brahma was dispatched. Do something. So grant him there's power with austerities. Yes. How is this research group going to reach their final conclusion? By the grace of God. It's very, very intricate. It would take the mind of a perfected soul to reach the conclusion perfectly. So it's in proportionate to. So their hope is that Prabhupada wanted this so much, so explicitly, and with such focused, it's just capturing that mercy. Not their own ability, but Prabhupada's desire. That's the hope. Anything else? Yes. What was the question? How is that desire? I got that part. What's the punchline? Sure. And as you're experiencing that desire, Prabhupada's anticipation is the whole world will awaken such a desire. You know, they'll have from different perspectives. Like the tourist, I want to see the place. The scientist, I want to see this planetarium. The religious person, I want to see how they've made this wonderful thing. It's, you know, the different, and the Vaishnavas will, you know, each person their different reason. But that was Prabhupada's wish. That to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That's the idea. Now, with that, there's austerity. There's austerity to get the land, austerity to get the money, austerity to put the, austerity to manage the place. Can you imagine managing so many pilgrims? And all their desires, and, you know, they gotta eat, and they gotta pass, and they gotta sleep, and, you know, that's a lot of management. And take any one thing, crowd control, cooking, purchasing all the produce, cutting all those vegetables, cleaning all the pots, sewage disposal, health needs. What to speak of all the egos that people are going to bring in the gate? You know, I want this. Major management. But that's an austerity for the sake of giving the world the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So, that was Prabhupada's inspiration. It's a very, very, very specific mandate he gave to us, his followers, build this place. Our international GBC passed a resolution saying, and we talked about it, you know, are we ready to do this? But we took a vote, and we're going to take responsibility for this place, this major temple, because it's an international effort, it's an international outcome, it's an international responsibility. It's not just a local, okay, it gets built, you guys take care of it. It's major. Major. Something else? Yeah. I got the basic idea what you're talking about, but I don't know what your question is. both. Because one can hold anger but still be angry. Okay? Anything over here? Yes? No? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.